For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
Hi everyone, I'm Kathy Tryons. I am a member of Xenos Christian Fellowship. I'm a home church leader, and I teach one class and am a sub for other classes. I've been in Xenos since 1978. I started when I was four. Something like that. But it's a privilege to be here. I must be in a room full of like-minded, fearful people. Yes? Yes? Cool. So we're going to talk about taking risks in light of eternity. If you want my PowerPoint, or if you want a, you know, a blank copy of student notes, you know, if you want to take this out, feel free just to email me. There's my email address. I can't imagine having sat through 2.5 days of conferences and thinking I would have enough space in my brain and my soul for more information. So I'm going to pray that you guys get enough space left so that if there's anything in here that you could use, it'll remain. So, but before we start, for full disclosure, when we talk about risk taking, I need to be honest that I'm naturally a risk taker. Don't you hate it when people, you go to like an evangelistic talk and the guy's a gifted evangelist and you're like, well, I'm not, and it looks so easy, or a gifted teacher, this is just, you know, the passage just automatically looks like this, and you're like, well, I'm not a gifted teacher. So I'm sorry, I'm a natural gift risk taker. So I jumped out of an airplane 2 times when I was 17. Neither time did I have a successful landing, so I wasn't gonna go for the third bad kind of landing, because I had two of that three. I left my professional job at the age of 30 and took off for the Amazon for 6 months to see if I could live in a third world environment, and I even went on a blind date at the age of 43 to meet my prospective husband. So, but those were the risks of youth. I'm a little older now, and I'm not so risk-taking anymore. I'm taking fewer risks, and I'm experiencing more fear. You know, the number one fear, if you're over the age of 55, I bet you can guess what the number one fear of me is. Falling on ice and breaking a hip. Right? Am I right? Am I right? Winter has taken on all new fears for me, you know. I'm afraid of saying things, you know, that are stupid in public. Nah, I'm not afraid of that anymore. I still do that. But I'm definitely afraid of having coffee, just one-on-one, with someone I don't know. And I don't think I was ever really in touch with that fear before. I'm growing more risk-averse as I'm getting older. So I really am in the same boat, you know, because we're not going to talk about natural risk-taking. We're going to talk about taking risks for Christ. And I'm getting more fearful in my thoughts about taking risks for my Lord. And so I'm hoping you'll get something from this teaching. This is a distillation of a home church series that my home church did, where we spent about 10 weeks examining risk-taking and risk-takers in the Bible. So I'm just gonna put together a little basket of nuggets, and I hope that one or two of these nuggets will fit you, okay? So let me go ahead and pray and ask the Lord to make that happen. Well, Lord, this is your information. When I was asked to do a workshop, I had no idea what to do, and so someone else in my home church said, why don't you do risk-taking? I thought that was genius. That must have come from you. So this is yours. This is all about you and what you want to do in our lives, but we confess we're afraid, and we confess that we need something greater than our fear to take risks for you. So, Jesus, I'm asking you to show up. I'm asking you, because you know each one of our hearts intimately, then you have something for each one of us. We right now surrender our agendas, and we take on your agenda to learn, to be humble, and to hear from you. Amen. All right, so this is going to be broken up into about four parts. Let's start with the first part. Let's think about what is risk, all right? So risk is, according to the Webster's Dictionary, a situation involving exposure to danger, harm, or loss. A situation potentially filled with experiencing some kind of danger, some kind of harm or some kind of loss. So when I went skydiving, I risked breaking a leg. When I went on my date, my blind date, I risked what? Disappointment, right? So in any type of risk, there's going to be the potential of experiencing danger, harm, or loss. And so when we think about taking risks for God, I want to throw out to you now, what are types of risks that you could take for God that you think like any Christian might take for God, or that you personally sense God wanting you to take? That's the first part of the question. And then associate with that the loss that you feel you might experience, or the harm that you might experience, or the danger. So give me a risk you might take for God, and then what you feel that you might lose. Yeah. Yeah, I felt that. Absolutely. Good. What else? And what do you risk?
I think you maybe risk loss of face, or somebody identifying with other people on assigning work or promotion.
Okay. You could risk status. You could risk advancement. You could risk esteem. Good. What else? Yeah.
You can risk bringing up spiritual things with a friend that has a while.
What's the danger? You could lose the friend. They could yell at you. I have friends who will just not bring anything up because someone might yell at them. Yeah.
Just getting older and less energy, you know, busy schedule, you risk losing sleep. You risk, doing your downtime, your me time, your fun time, whatever.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Well, you nailed pretty much everything I had. We fear the loss of prestige, the loss of comfort, and that could be emotional comfort, physical comfort, you know, anything like that. We can risk security, right? We could risk losing our belongings, right? People sit on our couches, they break them. We have high school groups in our house, and they just, you know, see it as a big gym. We could lose control. You know, I think that's a big one for me. You know, if I take a risk for God, I'm giving up some control. Esteem, we could, you know, lose our life, right? Well, those are all real valid fears that we could have. Well, let's turn to one of the most famous risk takers in the Bible, my hero, Peter. So this is the story of Peter walking on water, and some of the details that I'm going to give you come from a book called If You Want to Walk on Water, You Have to Get Out of the Boat by John Ortberg. It's a cute book. I think he's a great writer, and I learned a lot. It's not, you know, the spiritually or theologically super deep, but it really taught me a lot about risk-taking. So for the sake of not plagiarizing, John Ortberg, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat. And he uses Peter. So let's just read the text. Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. In the evening, the boat was already a long distance from land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. In the fourth watch of the night, Jesus came to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, and they said, "It's a ghost!" And they cried out in fear, but immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take courage, it's I." And this is literally, "I am." So he's proclaiming, "I'm God. Don't worry, God's here. Do not be afraid." How many times do we read, "Do not be afraid," right? And Peter said to him, "Lord," and this could be translated, "if or since it's you, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come." Peter got out of the boat and walked on water and came towards Jesus. But seeing the wind, Peter became frightened and began to sink. And Peter cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind stopped. And those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "You are certainly the Son of God." All right, so this is a very familiar encounter that one of Jesus' disciples has with him, Peter. Let's look at two details about this. First of all, Peter was not taking a risk because Peter was into extreme water sports. Okay, this was not a risk because Peter was bored or because Peter needed some kind of, you know, rush that a lot of us, you know, skydivers might, you know, a reason why we might jump out of airplanes. Peter did not say, "Let me walk on water," right? Peter said, "I want to come to you." So Peter was asking to be where Jesus was. That's the first thing. It wasn't a thrill-seeking request. It was a request to be with Jesus. The second detail I'd like to focus on is that Peter didn't just jump out of the boat autonomously or spontaneously. Peter waited, didn't he? He waited for Jesus to command him, come, or bid him come. So this was just not a spontaneous, sanguine, you know, I'm just going to do what I want to do for some fun risk. This was Peter waiting for Jesus to give him permission, waiting for Jesus to give a command. And so the kind of risk taking that we're going to be focusing on is not extreme sport risk taking, but extreme discipleship. Being where Jesus is, doing what Jesus commands us to do, even if those steps are scary, overwhelming, new, okay? We're talking about responsive actions of obedience. Yes, Peter asked, right? But he asked to be with Jesus, he asked to be near Jesus, and he waited for Jesus to command him. So it was really ultimately a responsive action of obedience. That's the kind of risk-taking we're going to talk about. All right, not nilly-willy, you know, I'm going to just do something because it feels fun. We're talking about obedience here. All right, so that's what risk is, and this is the kind of risk-taking we're going to be talking about. Now, what always accompanies risk? Always. Always. Do you know? What always accompanies risk? Fear. You're right. You have thought this through. You have felt this, huh? Fear always accompanies risk. Risk, by definition, requires fear. Because risk means choosing something new, choosing a new action, choosing new territory, choosing something unknown, and therefore choosing something you're not sure of, right? It all, whether this is a spiritual risk or even secular risk, it always accompanies some kind of fear because you're going, if it was something you had done before, you wouldn't be afraid. But risk is always about doing something new. And risk challenges us every time to decide between the known and the unknown, right? The known, and I'm going to put a negative spin on it, and some of you have already talked about it. You know, when Christ bids me to get out of the boat, he's asking me to leave behind what my, you know, what I call the weed patch. He calls me to leave the worries of the world. I don't have as much, I have to give up some of my worry thinking time if I'm going to do something new for Christ. He asks me to give up maybe some riches that I've been holding on to, and he asks me to give up some comfort. Netflix, I don't have as much time for you, right? Or whatever, right? So, I know those. Those are what I know. But God asked me to maybe get out of the boat and leave some of this behind, and it's scary. I know my neuroses. I know my sins. I know my comforts, right? And God will challenge me. So that will always be a fear will always be associated with risk. Because remember, what are we talking about? We're talking about discipleship. We're talking about following Christ, being where Christ is, and doing what Christ commands us to do. And discipleship always involves choice. Lord, I want to follow you. Okay, leave the plow and the field alone and come follow me, right? Lord, I want to follow you. Okay. Don't spend time waiting for your parents to die, burying your parents, right? You've got to go with me now, right? It always involves choice. Choice always involves risk, right? I feel it every time my husband says, would you like to go to this restaurant or that restaurant? Yeah. And I'm like, choice, opportunity cost. If I choose A, I'll lose B. What if B is better, right? It's just fear, right? Risk is always accompanied by fear. And since discipleship involves daily choices, you're always going to feel fear. It's always going to be a constant recurrence for Christ followers. Now, it was a great question the last time I taught this. Someone said, well, what about 1 John 4, where perfect love casts out fear, right? Well, that's true. But we're not talking about fear of Christ's judgment, okay? Perfect love casts out the fear of God, like God's mad at me or God's unhappy with me. We're not talking about that kind of fear. The Bible says, and there's plenty of people who did things that were scary. God does not judge us and condemn us for being afraid. We don't have to condemn ourselves for being afraid. How many of you think about, you get a sense that God wants you to do something new, talk to a new person, take on a new responsibility at church, talk to a coworker about Christ, and you feel afraid, and you can't even get out of the starting block because you're too busy beating yourself up for being afraid. It's like the double indemnity, right? It's like, you know, I'm sad that I'm afraid, and I'm really sad I'm afraid. It's like, you know, God knows you're afraid. Fear is not sin. But if you're going to be a risk taker for Christ, you can't let fear decide your action. All right, so this is two things. This is not the fear of God's condemnation. Perfect love casts that out. And I, for years, I didn't take a lot of risks because in my legalistic, warped mind, I don't even know where it came from, but I think our enemy held me captive for a couple decades of believing that God was this mean boss that I had to get things right for him. And Christ, someone said to me recently, which was so helpful, God is impossible to satisfy, but he's easy to please. Right? Satisfaction was paid for by Christ on the cross. God has been satisfied when I placed my faith in Christ, but he's easy to please when I take my risks. So God is not judging us for being afraid. We just can't let fear take over. So expect fear and normalize fear. Personally, that really comforts me. I get to be afraid. And I get to be afraid all the time. And if you're into following Christ, you're into experiencing fear. And I know there's a lot of people who are like, dude, I just do not want to feel afraid. So they don't take risks. But you might as well, you know, make up your mind. If you're going to be a disciple of Christ, you're going to feel fear, and that's okay. It's a normal part of the discipleship process. Does that encourage you? Part of me is like, oh, really? Okay, I'm glad. I'm glad that I can be okay with that. All right, fear always accompanies risks. But you know what the other thing is that always accompanies risk? Always. Growth. Growth always accompanies risk. Think of some risks that you took for Christ. Did you grow in some way? Yeah. In some way you grew. We're going to take a look at that in a little bit. What did Peter gain by getting out of the boat? What did he gain that the other 11 didn't? Yeah, he learned to trust in Jesus on many levels, right? He learned that Jesus was powerful enough. He learned that Jesus will take care of him even if he sinks. Good. What else? Yeah.
Just to go along with that, he got to experience Jesus' provision.
Exactly. Great. What else? You're missing the most, for me, the most important part. Yeah.
He
He got a story. You know what? You want to be invited to the parties? You got to be a risk taker because you have the best stories. Very important. Peter got the story and the other 11 didn't. He had more invitations to the parties, I'm sure. Kathy, come and, you know, I've got some people. There are some stories about me floating around that are absolutely true that I've told. But they love to hear my risk-taking stories. He experienced Jesus' power. He got close to Jesus. He got confidence to risk again. Why did he get confidence to risk again? Because he did risk some more, didn't he? Yeah. He walked on water. He also experiences Jesus' personal correction. That's a beautiful thing. And notice when Jesus corrected him. Before they got into the boat, it was private. It was tender. It was instructive. He could take a risk again because, again, Jesus wasn't mad at him. Jesus corrected him and told him, in a sense, what he needs to have to make it all the way. Notice that Peter got really far, too, because all Jesus, unless Jesus had, like, Mr. Elastic, you know, arm, what would that, what super character would that be? Plastic Man? I don't know. Sorry. I was into Archie and Veronica. I don't know. You know, Peter was right there, wasn't he? Because all Jesus had to do was stretch out his arm. He got Jesus' correction. That is sweet. Right? So, let's talk about why I think fear can grip us so much. And I think one of the reasons when we think about taking risks is our faulty definitions of success and failure. And associated with that faulty definition of success and failure is our idealized outcomes. I think that's one of the reasons why we are so afraid to take risks. So I have this conversation with my neighbor. I had waited 2 years. I was fearful, and I heard from God, and I do sometimes, you know, get these thoughts that are pretty strong, and I heard, you know, you got to go try. So I invited him to home church, and he's basically, hell no. And yeah, but that was like, well, what do you believe? And we had a nice conversation, and I got to share some bit of the gospel. He didn't understand it. He had a couple questions, but then at the end he's like, I'm basically done, you know, and I walk away thinking, I failed. He did not fall on his knees and thank me first and then ask Jesus into his life, right? You know, we walk away, we think we failed, right? Or we have that conversation with our friend. We bring up something in their life that is a moral block to spiritual growth. They're stuck. We see it. We care. We pray. We go in. We say it with tenderness, with tears, with all the right things, and they still yell at us. And we think, well, I'll never do that again, right? We take a new responsibility on in our church, and nobody buys into it and follows our designated leadership. And we think, that was easy, right? I'm never doing that again. Right? We have these idealized outcomes that, you know, if I get assigned something, everyone's going to follow. Or if I speak into someone's life that I know God is calling me to do, you know, they're going to say, oh, thank you. Here's the log out of my eye. I'm free. Thank you. You know, come on. Am I the only one? The drama that goes in my brain. I do hope there is not one of those big screens in heaven, you know, because I don't want you all to see these idealized outcomes that I have when I think Jesus wants me to go do something. So we go through the, you know, couldas, the shouldas, the wouldas, or the proclamation of defeat. I will never do that again. I'll tell you what, I've got a lot of friends that are my age that have said, I will never do that again, and they're spiritually stuck. They are sitting in the boat, and they are not taking risks because in their minds, they failed. Failure is, if you hear anything today, failure is not an event. It is not an event. Failure is only an interpretation of an event. Failure is not an event. It is only an interpretation of an event. We interpret the risk as a failure if the outcome does not turn out the way we have deemed successful. You know, Crab, I think Crab, again, in my previous workshop, some guy brought up this idea that Crab has that was just revolutionary for me, and I think it fits so well. Have you ever heard Crab's thing about, you know, goals versus desires? Very helpful. A goal is something that you can enact and you can accomplish without anybody else's will. So I could drop 10 pounds if I wanted to. I just don't want to. No, I could, because there's no other will involved. I could stop smoking. There's no other will. I could walk across the yard to my neighbor's house and knock on his door to tell him about Christ. That's a goal of mine, right? But desires are where something has to happen involving somebody else's will. So my goal is to be pleasant to my husband, but my desire is to have a great date night. But he comes in a bad mood, right? Or my goal is to have the kids I babysit for get in the car in about a minute, but it's just a desire because their little wills are involved, right? And one of the ways we interpret success or failure is because we expect the other person to do what we want them to do, but that's only a desire. And we can work for goals, but we can only hope for desires. And so think about that. Think about the last failure you had when you took a risk for God. Did it involve somebody else's will for this idealized outcome to take place? All right, that's revolutionary. Because Jesus, when he talks about in that parable of the master with the people with the talents, you know, at the end, oh, let me just go back. He says, "Well done, good and successful servant." Remember that?
No.
Oh, he doesn't? What does he say? Yes. Isn't that powerful? He doesn't say, "Well done, good, and you did it right, servant. Well done, and they accepted Christ because you're so great, servant." Well done, successful servant. He says, "Well done, good and faithful." What does it mean to be full of faith? Well done. You were full of faith. You were willing to act. You got out of the boat. You got out of the boat because you trusted me. That's what Jesus is going to say to us. Not well done. You led so well that everyone followed you. Or you spoke the message of Jesus one time and that person accepted Christ. Or everyone loved your words of admonishment, and they all obeyed you, right? Just be faithful. You don't always know what the right choice is. You just sense God wants you to move towards somebody, but you don't even know exactly what to say. Jesus isn't even all that concerned with how you say it. He's not going to say, "Well done, you chose path A, and that's exactly what I wanted you to choose. You chose the right door." I think we just assign to God so much that he isn't demanding of us. He just wants us to trust him. And besides that, let's go back. Are we so sure we know the outcomes that Jesus has planned for our getting out of the boat? So in Robinson Crusoe, in this story, the character starts to believe in God, and I remember this one part he talks about, he realizes when he views life, it's like him, he's marooned on an island, it's like him looking at the horizon from the beach, but God is looking at the horizon from the cliffs. Who has the better view? God. And we've been talking about the seen and the unseen world. Who are we to decide the outcomes? Who are we to decide what the best outcome is? I mean, it's like, oh my God, do I have to admit to these people how arrogant I am? That I've decided what the best outcome is? Right? For me to deem something a success? It's just not true. So, well done, good and faithful servant. So here's the question. Here's your pop quiz. Did Peter fail when he sank? It's a scary question. No, I don't believe he failed. He didn't, again, Jesus didn't say, why, what did he say? Why did you fail? Did he say that? He just said, no, why did you doubt? He didn't say, why did you fail? He said, why did you doubt? Peter was practicing. Aren't we allowed to practice obedience? You know, when a kid practices walking, is the first attempt, you know, a walk to the store and back? No. They practice. We're practicing how to love people. We're practicing how to talk about our faith. We're practicing how to encourage or admonish. We're just practicing. Peter did not fail in the way that we deem failure. He practiced obedience. That's all. That's very encouraging to me. That's very encouraging to me. All right. So let's embrace some of the truths about risk. Trusting God feels risky, but it is perfectly safe. We read in Proverbs 29:25, which I don't think I have on your notes because I think I added that later. Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. Most of us know this spiritual adage, you know, the safest place to be is in the center of God's will. The safest place to be is in the center of God's will. It's just the safest place to be. You know, Dennis talked about Abraham on Wednesday night. You know, let's think about Abraham's sacrificing Isaac. You know, that was a huge, risky move that Abraham took, right? He was walking into the unknown, wasn't he? And there was a real possibility that he was going to have to kill his own son. But Abraham knew God's promises that a great nation would come from Isaac. By this time in Abraham's life, he had had enough interactions with God that he knew God's power. And so Abraham was able to say to the servants who were with him, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship and return to you. Abraham was taking a risk, but Abraham was confident that somehow God was going to pull off what God promised. He was able to entrust his son to God. I mean, in one sense, Abraham really didn't risk anything, because he knew that somehow God could even raise Isaac from the dead. Somehow God was going to make it right. And so he really didn't risk anything. Right? Those who trust in the Lord are kept safe. Abraham knew God's promises and power. So we can take risks too, because we can know God's promises and power also. I love this verse. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. How many of you believe that means if you do all the ministry right, you'll get a husband or a wife? I did, right? I used this against the Lord for years, right? You said, right, 3 weeks later, I should have my husband. But what do our hearts truly desire? I know we think they desire me time. I know we think they desire enough money to feel financially secure. I know we believe our hearts desire a spouse to make us feel accepted. I know that's what, you know, there's a level where we feel that. But that's not really what our hearts desire. And it doesn't desire esteem from our coworkers. It doesn't desire financial safety. It doesn't desire the right outcomes when we take steps for God. Did you know that? What does your heart really long for? Unconditional love, security, significance, and acceptance. You may not know that because you're living like I lived for decades on this level of, if only I had, right? For me, it was if only I had a husband, And God, you know, God, you promised to grant me the desires of my heart, and I'm 41 now, tick tock, tick tock. And he said, Kathy, what does your heart really desire? I'm like, I desire a husband. How many times do I have to tell you? He goes, no, what does your heart really desire? I go, I want to be loved. I want to be safe. I want to be accepted. Oh, my God, I get that from you. Right? It's like, oh, how long did that take me to understand? And so your heart doesn't desire what we listed up in front when we felt the fears of losing those things. This is what our hearts desire. And we get these as we stay close to Jesus, getting out of the boat where he is and trusting him when he calls us to do something, even if it feels risky. I mean, really, some of the things that we listed, shouldn't we get rid of anyway? I mean, I really don't need that much prestige. A little less would probably be good, right? Some of the things that Jesus is calling me to give up probably is pretty healthy. A little less me time wouldn't kill me, right? It would actually, I'd enjoy life more if I was serving Christ and gaining more of that. So he sometimes asks us to risk these things for our own good. So if being obedient is not risky, then maybe being disobedient is risky. Not in the loss of salvation. This is not a scare tactic, but let's just be logical. What do we risk if Jesus calls us to come near him and do something for him that we don't do? And we've all not done stuff, let's face it. But in general, what do we ultimately risk losing? What have you risked? Yeah, we've risked not experiencing some of that security and significance. Yeah, we risk not experiencing the life that God has crafted for us. And I think this is a good place to say, you know, when Jesus calls you to get out of the boat, that's for you. He's got things for you to do that no one else can do. Let's not compare the risks that one person takes. Do you have someone in mind that you idolize, you wish you could be more like them, and they take more risks? I do. I would be embarrassed if I told you who it was, Gary DeLashman. You know, I'm supposed to be like Gary on some, it's just insane. I'm insane, you know. He takes all these risks, you know, and I'm supposed to be like him. No, God has risks and a life of risks and trust and an adventure crafted just for me. Stuff that Gary can't do. Stuff that you can't do, stuff that I can't do, your risks. I can't get out of the boat when Jesus calls you to get out of the boat, right? These are risks. This is a life of an adventure that God has crafted for you and you alone. Let's not measure risks. Don't waste the time that I do. We risk not experiencing Jesus' closeness or the Spirit's power. We risk not seeing profit in others' lives now. We will get glimpses of the effects, the outcomes. Not a whole lot, I believe, probably because our egos couldn't handle it. God gives us enough to encourage us. And when the curtain is drawn, we're going to see, you know, I think the full story of how our risks rippled through eternity. And we risk not getting the rewards that God can't wait to give us. I've been meditating on that. God is like excited to give me rewards. He creates the risks. He empowers me to do the risks. He gets to take care of the outcomes. He gives me the courage to do the risks, and then he rewards me for getting out of the boat. Oh my gosh. He's so cool. He is so cool. So how do we do it? How do we get out of the boat? Well, this is not rocket science. I'm not going to tell you anything new. I'm just going to give you some of the ideas that have helped me stay in the risk-taking game. As I've gotten older and I have gotten more fearful, I've got decades of things not going well, failures, even though I'm defining them in a faulty way. I see my besetting sins over decades, you know, that can wear me down, and I've experienced rejection. If you're young, you're just starting out getting disappointed. You know, you've got a long way to go to trust God, right? Right? A long way to go to know God's love. You know, you get older and it becomes a little less, you know, I get scared taking risks because I know what I might experience, you know, some rejection, some embarrassment, some, you know, prestige loss. So we got to fix ourselves on Jesus and the gospel, the good news of all that we get when we've placed our lives in Jesus' hands. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 is great for that. So therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. This verb, fix, is like what sailors did when they needed an absolute reference point. They would fix their eyes on something on the horizon, and they would not take their eyes off, and they would orient their boats towards that point. We have to fix our eyes on Jesus, not on the waves, like Peter did, and I know we do, but we have to learn to fix our eyes on Jesus. What does that mean? That is so freaking abstract. So I have learned a little to fix myself on Jesus and the gospel by consistently feeding myself. I want to say daily, but I don't want to put us under some kind of measurement. But truly, I'm so glad when I became a Christian when I was 12. And when I was 13, I heard of the term quiet time. I'm so glad that I had been taught and had modeled for me a devotional life in the morning. You know, so daily, as best as we can, consistently feeding ourselves in the Bible, in prayer, consistently expressing gratitude. How many of you wake up and have learned to, the very first thoughts that come into your mind, fix on thanking God for something? Oh my God, I was challenged to do that, and it changed my life. So honestly, 80% of the mornings, you know, I wake up and I choose to say, wow, Jesus, I'm waking up and I'm still saved. Thank you. Or Jesus, I can't believe you found me when I was 12. Or Jesus, I got one day closer to seeing you. Thank you. Instead of, oh my God, I got to go to work again. You know, or something negative. It's so easy to start off negative, but I've really asked the Lord to train me in being thankful. Now, you know, I don't get a lot of sleep sometimes, and I've even learned to say, Jesus, thank you for the 5 hours I got, because it could have been four. And you're going to give me what I need. I look for, like, true things. It can't be robotic. You know, sometimes I have to switch it up. But I look for aspects of the gospel that are as true in the first moment of waking up today as they were last year. Thank you that you've adopted. I'm your daughter. Thank you so much. You know. That keeps my eyes fixed on Jesus, gets my heart ready to obey him. How many of us are really honest with Christ? How many of us really say, oh, I hate to take risks. I don't want to be afraid again. I'd rather not today. Will you help me? Are we confessing our aversion to risk-taking? Remember, you are free to be as honest with Christ as you need to be. Let's not pretend that we're not afraid. Let's just be honest. That's really helped me a lot. And then, again, I ponder eternity. And I think as we get older, we tend to ponder eternity a little more. I can, you know, if I have a full life, I've got a number assigned to how many more years I have on this planet now. When I was 30, it was like too long. But now I'm like, I got about 35 more years left. Wow, I got about 35 more years of trusting Christ before I get to see him. Okay, I think with Christ's help, I can do this. I hope, you know, I ponder eternity and all of the blessings that I'm going to get. And it's becoming more and more real as I get older. But we can start in our 20s, in our teens, thinking about the reality of heaven versus the facade of this matrix. Then I think we need to surround ourselves with risk takers. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, right? People who have come before us and have taken risks. So, you know, surround yourself with risk takers. Do a study of people who took risks in the Bible. Peter risked, and I put that in quotations, because he didn't really risk safety, did he? It just felt risky. He risked safety when he got out of the boat. Ruth risked the known when she left Moab and went to the Promised Land, went to Canaan. The royal official, John 4, you know that story when he walks 25 miles to see where Jesus is, and he says, someone's dying. Is it my son? Yeah, my son's dying. Come with me, Jesus, and heal him. And what does Jesus say? In a sense, let go, go home, he's healed. Now imagine that crisis point that this official had. You know, his superstitious healing would say Jesus had to go and touch him, but Jesus says, just go home. That was a crisis point. That was a risk, wasn't he? He risked control. Do you imagine walking home, those 25 miles, about a 2 days journey, that he wasn't afraid? That he wasn't second-guessing himself? Right? You know, but he walked. He obeyed. He had faith. And, of course, his son was healed. Gideon, when God winnowed his army and judges down to about 300 men, he risked defeat. Surround yourself. Read Esther. Read Daniel. Read Stephen. Read Hudson Taylor. Read Corrie ten Boom. Read the saints of old who risked their lives. Did they really risk their lives? Their lives were safe with Jesus. I mean, really, the things that we're so afraid to risk, our belongings, our time, they're not even ours to hold on to. You know, from eternity past, God decided your income level. He decided your intelligent quotient. He decided your demographics. He decided where you're going to be placed. That's all him anyways. They're not even yours to hold on to. We don't really risk holding on to anything that we really can hold on to anyway. And then surround yourself with friends who take risks. I've got some friends near me that take risks. They keep me in the risk-taking game. They challenge me to take risks. They pray for me to take risks. Do you have friends, good friends near you who are taking spiritual risks? Yeah, you got to have those. And then lastly, ask Jesus for risks. Okay, so here's my story. So about 2.5 years ago, I was in bed on a Tuesday night, and for those of you in Columbus who don't have cable, you might know what channel 4-2 is called. You know 4-2? MeTV. Yeah. I was watching I Dream of Jeannie. And I'm laying in bed. I'm like, oh my God, shoot me now. I cannot watch one more rerun. I got nothing to do. I said, Lord, you've gifted me with these gifts. What do you want me to do? And then I heard the two words, junior high. And I said, no, you've got to be kidding. He goes, junior high. I'm like, okay, I knew of a cell group of junior high girls, sixth grade, who was getting too big and they needed some extra leaders. So I called my friend. I said, I think Jesus is asking me to do junior high. So here's a 54-year-old, you know, uncool woman taking, you know, a whole gaggle of sixth grade girls on an adventure. I felt so uncomfortable. You know, I remember saying something about Facebook, and they're like, Facebook? That's so 2012. Oh, my God. And they're singing all these songs. I hadn't heard these songs. It was a risk. And they're like, your teachings are kind of long. Your teachings are kind of abstract. One girl pulls me aside. She goes, you know, we don't care if the teachings are bad. We just don't want them to be long. And I'm like, okay. Note to self, you know. Anyway, you know, I risked a lot. On the surface. But it was a grand adventure. And then the four that, you know, knew Christ are doing really well. It was a grand adventure. My husband and I, about 10 years ago, took a risk and left our very safe home church of about 30 people. And we live in the Ohio State campus area, and all around us are young people. And we literally, with the permission of our leaders, left our home church and with two other couples started a neighborhood Bible study. We don't do that often in Zenos. We don't leave a home church and go do something radical. But I'm a risk taker, right? Right? My husband's like, okay. I'm like, I think God told us to do this. He goes, I wish Jesus would tell me these things too. I'm like, let's just do this thing, right? So after 2 years of having a lot of young people over, staying out late at night and doing our seekers group, two people had come to Christ, but we had lost one of the three couples. They left our church. Satan kind of, you know, took them out. And we didn't have enough people generated for a healthy home church. And so we had to, you know, fold in to a home church again. You know, did we fail? You know what the answer is, right? We were practicing, right? It was only, you know, if we call that a failure, that'd only be an interpretation of an event. We don't believe we failed. We grew. we grew, right? It wasn't the idealized outcome that we had hoped, but we grew. So are you asking Jesus, what do you want me to do today? And then keep taking risks. It's like exercising. I started exercising when I was in the seventh grade. I've never stopped, but you know what? Now that I'm older, it's like I don't want to exercise so much. And you know how I stay exercising? By exercising. You know how you keep taking risks? By taking risks. You just keep taking risks. You just don't let yourself get comfortable for very long, because your trajectory will then not take risks. God has a grand adventure for you, but it's choice. It's discipleship. He'll give you everything you need. He'll tell you what risks to take, or at least lead you in a general way. He might have you walk into the unknown for a while. He'll take care of the outcomes. He'll give you all you need to do these risks. And your risks are different from anybody else's. So don't, you know, let's not compare ourselves. You know, science affirms God's tandem of risk and growth. So I was in the doctor's office. I'm not talking about Who Killed Summer Vacation. It's called Bounce Back. And neuroscientists have actually mapped the brain of risk takers, and their brains are healthier. And they are more resilient. You know how we can learn to take risks? We can have confidence of taking more risks. You know, science confirms what God tells us, what God told Peter, get out of the boat. That we actually are healthier, more resilient people if we take risks. We grow. If we don't take risks, we shrink. And our worlds get smaller and smaller. We get more and more afraid. And God will always propel us. Get out of the boat. Come with me. Come where I am. And so it's kind of affirming that science tells us what God's been telling us for centuries, millennia. All right, so we've got a little bit of time. Questions, comments, disagreements? Yeah, Heidi.
I really appreciate what you said about it's okay to feel afraid. I was getting together with someone in my home group and reading books with her, kind of helping her with her marriage and stuff. And I was thinking, okay, I can do this. God's helping me do this. And we've been getting together for a little over a year. And I tell you, this friend of mine is so different than me. I mean, you hold us up together, and our likes and for things are so different, but God brought us together, and I really felt like our friendship was really ordained by the Lord. Well, one day she announced to me in our home church that she had stage 3 breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And I remember that night thinking, I can't keep getting together with her. I don't know how to help her face this tragedy in her life. And I was so afraid. Like, I wanted to just run away.
Yeah.
And I am not that kind of person. I'm a pretty loyal friend.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, feeling really bad that I felt that way.
Mm-hmm.
And God really reminded me, it's okay that you feel this way. I'm going to help you walk with her through this experience, and it has taught me so much about how to do that and to just really hang in there with people that are different than you, that are scary, especially if you're an introverted person like me.
Extroverts are scared too.
Yeah,
they just don't show it.
Yeah,
they just talk louder.
But you know, it was so good that you said that, because I think that if I had just given up at that point because I felt afraid, I think I would have really missed out on God showing me how to depend on Him to come alongside somebody in a very terrifying.
That's beautiful.
Situation.
You would have stayed in the boat, and you would not. There would have been a whole lot lost. And I think that sometimes Jesus just takes us. Have you ever gotten to the end? It's almost like the end of the. It's like the U.S. border. It's like that's all you know. And Jesus wants you to go into Canada. You're like, I don't have the tool. I don't know anymore. I'm at the end of what I know. Jesus goes, perfect. Come on. Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking of when you were talking about trusting God feels risky, but it is perfectly safe. And I was thinking of when in the Old Testament, when they crossed the sea, and like he split or he parted the sea, and like imagine like how crazy that would be, with like walking into this like crazy deep water. But it's like this picture of like safety, nonetheless, of like dry land.
Yeah.
And then protection from their enemies and everything too.
Excellent.
And I think it's a cool thing to consider that God, like when we're doing God's will, there's like that fear and tension when we're like kind of up against an opposing world or something. But when we take these steps, it's like also an exciting.
It's an adventure.
Yeah.
It might be a great Bible study, you know, if you want to challenge like next year, or you know, make it a year study. Every time you see someone in the Bible take a risk, journal what they potentially could have lost, and then what Jesus does, you know, what God does. That might be a great study. Remind me of that next year. So I'm going to do it. Yeah.
I was thinking while you were talking, I've been very encouraged by the older believers in my home church, and I'm talking to people who have been watching for decades, and it's been really cool to watch them and see that even though they've been doing this for a long time, that they still have, some of them still have that fear, and that it's okay, and that God has still used them despite the fear. So I guess I'm just like encouraged like younger people to kind of like find people who have been walking for a long time and kind of like watch them and see like the ways that they've like worked through that. And it's also comforting to know that it's not just going to go away, but it's something that like you're going to be continuously working on and practicing, but that God is still using it.
It is encouraging. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Yes, then. 1, 2, 3. And the seeds we planted with people who weren't ready to meet Christ. We hung out with some pretty crazy people. And they, you know, they got to see Christ in action. Yeah, so thank you. That's a great verse. I love that verse. Yeah.
When you were talking about trusting God feels risky but perfectly safe, and I'm really glad that on your risk taker list you included someone like Stephen, who actually did lose his life for God. Because I just got done reading a book called Don't Waste Your Life, and I think the author is John Piper, and he's saying, look at the martyrs. I mean, walking with God can be risky in the physical sense, but we have to redefine what is safe.
Yep.
And in Christ, we are safe no matter what our circumstances.
Yeah. Great. So. Great. Thank you. Yes.
I was going to say something very similar to that. But I do also like your point a lot of the fact that we have idealized outcomes.
Yes.
I do think it's really interesting how many times like my will ends up getting up there instead of God's will for some reason. And I end up like on my butt, super discouraged. I'm like, what's going on? And it's like, oh, maybe this isn't the way God saw it. Like, especially with ministry lately, it's like nothing's happening. Like, all these girls, they're not going anywhere. Like, it's happening. It's like, well, maybe this isn't how God viewed my ministry at this time in my life and stuff. Which I'm still in the process of accepting that. But
I know. I hear you.
Like,
me too.
It's just interesting how much our will does.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's probably pretty good to question ourselves. Why do we think we know? You know, we think we know.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. We don't know. All right, I'll be around if you want to talk a little more. This is supposed to be over at 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't you love it when the class gets out
early?
Yeah. Let's pray. Anybody can pray. So let's just spend a little bit of time praying.
Thank you.
just think about a risk or something that you're that you have in store for us, and how we can really just trust you. And so I just pray that we would all become people that are just continuing to seek out risks and you provide everything we need to go with us. You provide the energy, the words, whatever, Lord. If you just, if you can control it and not just say, okay, God, I got this, I'll go do it. But Lord, thank you that you provide the power, you provide everything, and the outcome is up to you.
Yep.
Right. Pray, Lord, that you would be, as we take these risks and as risks come into our lives that might not even be in our control, that you'd be aligning our feelings with that truth. That you would be really comforting us with
you. Yeah. Well, Lord, you bid us to get out of the boat every day. In some way, Lord, there's obedience for us. And that is the safest place to be. And I know, you know, I'm going to go home and I'm going to stay in the boat. I just know I'm going to, you know, sin against you. And yet your grace is sufficient. And I ask for the courage to keep taking more risks. Lord, I don't want to live a life for the next, you know, 30-some years or however long I'm going to be on this planet. I don't want to live a safe life. I want to live a life of experiencing more of your love. I want to see people changed because I'm here. I want to do the good works that you prepared for me to do. I pray you would infuse us with a sense of eternity, something that we just can't shake out, something that we can't dull out or numb out or avoid, Lord, but that eternity would be in a very healthy way always in front of us. You have placed eternity in our hearts, and so we ask that you would keep bringing that out as we learn to follow you more and more closely. Thank you for these guys. What a privilege it is to just be honest about, you know, my failures and, you know, my quirkiness, Lord, but I've learned you love me, and you delight in me, and you delight in all of them. And I pray that they would really bask in your love and then gain the courage to follow you more closely. Amen.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.